I'd like to turn in your Bible, please, to the book of Jeremiah, chapter 2. Jeremiah, chapter 2. And you would recall our objective. We spent some time looking at God's wonderful person and all of his, not all of them obviously, all of his attributes, his character, his conduct, so that being in the presence of God, since we always must be in the presence of God, we can never be out of his presence. Therefore, we want to understand his person, since we are always in his presence. And we want to be able to rightly relate to him and identify with him and honor him. And so we spent time going through that in a very, I hope, a practical way. So now we've been seeking to now implement, exercise that wonderful truth. So now here we're looking at Jeremiah and Daniel back and forth and Ezekiel. All three of them lived at the same time. And thus Nebuchadnezzar, the world, Babylon, is the world. And Jeremiah looks at a people, Israel, here they are, trying to survive, succeed as a religious people, as a spiritual people, if you may use the word, and in the light of the world. Daniel is living in the world as a believer. Jeremiah is living as a believer in religion, the system, Judaism. So we get a window on both sides. How do we handle the church and religion today as believers? And how do we handle being in the community, in the state, in the country, in the world? And so we looked at Jeremiah, and in chapter 2, we share together, and reminding you, remember Josiah is the king right now in Jeremiah. And Josiah is living after two kings, 57 years of downhill. So the nation of Israel has been going downhill and downhill, deteriorating for 57 years. And now here comes Josiah along, a young king, 8 years old starting with. And here's a young king, 22 years old, 21 years old by the time Jeremiah comes along in his ministry approximately. And in the process, Josiah tries to do right. And he does a wonderful list of reforms. He tries to make things right in every way. He tries to do it. But the people do not have a mind to go with that. So God reminds, by way of the prophet, to Josiah that God would honor Josiah's attempt as king to fix the nation. He would honor that. The nation would not be fixed. The nation was set to go downhill. And Josiah needed to know that so that he would do everything he could, but he already was told by God and the prophet that you're not going to make it come back to the days of Hezekiah or something. You aren't going to have that happen. So now here in chapter 2 again, Jeremiah, God, the first message of Isaiah recorded, Jeremiah recorded, I should say. And remember, we share together that God introduces and reminds them of the past. And we share together the word, God remembers. And God remembers what? And Israel needed to be informed about what God was remembering and going to be working from, where he's working from. So here in verse 2 we read and went over it. Go and cry in the ears of Jerusalem, saying, Thus saith the Lord, I remember thee, the kindness of thy youth. We looked at all of that. the kindness of youth, the love of thine espousals, it means as a bride going after her beloved, going after the bridegroom, the bride going after it, and Israel, and thus the end of verse 2, thou wentest after me, wentest after God, in the wilderness, in a land that was not sown, no way to survive. You went after me. You left Egypt. Now, I know they had to leave Egypt because God brought the plagues, and they had to. They had to. But they left. There is no apostasy in Israel from the time they Exodus 12, to the time they get to Sinai, Mount Sinai. There's no apostasy, no idolatry. No apostasy, no idolatry. None. They're looking to God. Remember we shared last time that they go to Mount Sinai and God tells them they're his people and God was going to make them a holy, wonderful nation above all nations of the world. And they were, well, they didn't understand. And all that, remember Exodus 19:8, all that God says we will do. Now, they didn't understand, and they were in their own flesh, in their own nature, trying to fulfill God's wonderful words and work and the purpose. But it was in their own energy and by their own doing. So in the process of that, God honored that, though, and we shared that together in Deuteronomy and 5 and 28, etc., that God honored. He understood that they had turned. They were not, here's all the Egyptian background, here's all their thinking, and they were willing to take the instruction from God and implement it into their life by their own doing. And that was a big thing, just to do that. Just to do that was a wonderful thing. So now, and God honored that. But remember, verse 29, they had no heart. They had no heart. No heart for God. They had a head, but no heart. And God said that right up front. But it was a wonderful time in the history of Israel. There was no apostasy. There was no idolatry. They went and they followed now. So that is the background that God introduces the prophet Jeremiah's message to Israel, to all Israel. And verse 3, Israel was holiness unto the Lord. Israel was holiness. Remember, they're going to follow the Lord. And in the process, Israel is holy, holy unto the Lord. And they are going in the direction of God, holy. They're set apart people, and they're going in the direction of the Lord. And not only that, God said, He's reminded to put in his memory. God said, listen, I am remembering, I am reminded of how you left Egypt, how you went to Mount Sinai. I'm remembering this. And, by the way, you realize that you were a separated people, Exodus 19, 4, 5, 6. You're a holy people. You're going to be a holy nation unto the Lord. And that you were the first fruits of his increase. The first fruits. Now, what does that mean? Well, what did you know? And you know, without turning there at this point, in Leviticus, etc., all the first fruits, everything of the harvest, if you were going to harvest a field of beets or tomatoes or carrots, and the first bit of it, first part of it, belonged to God. The first part of every one and everything, the firstborn son, and turn with me there while you're thinking about it. Exodus chapter 4. And in verse 22, before they even get to Mount Sinai, what did God tell them? Exodus 4 and 22. And thou shalt say unto Pharaoh, who's after them? Thou shalt say unto Pharaoh, thus saith the Lord, say what? Israel is my son, even my firstborn. He's my firstborn. That's why God takes the firstborn son in the last 10th plague. Firstborn son. Firstborn animal, firstborn sheep, firstborn camel. They all die. All die. All had to die. Firstborn. Firstborn belongs to God. Back over to Jeremiah chapter 2. And in verse 3. Holiness. Israel was holiness unto the Lord. The first fruits of his increase. God had done and was exercising a wonderful harvest. God set the world in motion in his creation, by his creation, and by his redemptive purpose. And the world was in motion, and God had raised up, scattered all the nations. God raised up Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. And you have the nation of Israel. The nation of Israel is to be a testimony to all of the nations. All the people and all the creation belongs to God. Everything, everywhere. How is that to be affirmed and understood? The firstborn, my firstborn, Israel, is mine. And I want you to know that that firstborn, Israel, is to be a testimony to all of the nations that they all belong to me. They all have to answer me. They all have to answer me. So here's all the nations in the world, and there's Israel, the firstborn. The firstborn, beet, carrot, corn, sheep, belongs to God. Israel is the firstborn nation. It belongs to God. And you know, with James, without going doing and all that, God said he treats the church as his firstborn. The church is his firstborn. Of all the people in the world, and then there's the believing believers, they're the firstborn. They're mine. Now watch, he's trying to help them. Going to do a wonderful thing, because if I can do it. And thus, the firstborn. So, Israel belongs to God. It's a sanctified people, set apart. They are his special property, sanctified. They are his special protection. They are his by possession, and they are his to be protected. He's going to protect them. Of all the people, he's going to protect them. Now, and therefore, in verse 3, all that devour him, all that devour, the word devour is the word to eat food, to eat up nation. When you conquer a people, you devour them, you eat them up, you possess them. All that devour him, Israel, which is my firstborn and holy set apart nation, all that devour him shall offend. All that devour him shall offend. And the word offend means guilty, 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 fault. Transgression. And it means someone who bears is being punished, and they are presumed to be guilty. All that devour, all that try to eat up my people, I shall offend. They are guilty. Whenever you touch the apple of mine eye, Israel, you touched me. You can touch the Philistines and the Syrians and the Egyptians. But when you touch Israel, you touch me. They're my possession. They're my firstborn. They belong to no one else. And the firstborn is the evidence. That's why Israel gave of the first fruits, to remind themselves that all nine-tenths, everything else belongs to God. Everything does. That's what they never were to forget, that everything belongs to God. Now, hang on to that. Now, so here they are, and they offend. They're guilty. All nations that pursue, think of the Amalek in Exodus 17, etc. And all of the nations that pursue are guilty. They're guilty. And evil, trouble, badness shall come upon them, saith the Lord. It shall come upon them. And so, now, looking at their beginning, God was very gracious. He was doing it for his glory and honor. God remembered, God reminds Israel from what was. Remember where you came from. Remember where you are. And remember where you're going in the next 10 years. I was with you back then. Here you are now. And you're going there. And you aren't going to go without me. You can't leave me out. And the problem was, they're going to push him out, which is what happens now. And thus, in verse 4, keeping in mind that God was to be involved, his name, his honor, his creative purpose, and Israel was to be rightly aligned with God. Now Israel, in unbelief, ingratitude, with unthankful heart, they're going to go, and when you begin 4, 5 through 9, God's going to tell you they apostatized. I'm trying to tell you, said God, this is what you had in the beginning, and this is where you are. And if you keep reading in Jeremiah, these are the results. Now remember, they're sitting there. You have to remember, here's Josiah, the king. Here's Nebuchadnezzar standing up there waiting to come down. Waiting to come down. Here's Nebuchadnezzar waiting to come down. And here we are standing there and we're doing. And don't you know, you are in deep danger. Don't you understand what's going to happen? And when you turn away from God, it's the wrong thing to do. And God warns them. God awakens them. Don't do it. And Jeremiah is going to be there, and he'll be saying it to Josiah, and then he'll say it to the next couple of kings, and then he'll show it to Nebuchadnezzar. Going to be through the whole thing. Jeremiah is right there, and the people ought to be right there, but they aren't. And they aren't honoring God, and God gives them plenty of honor, plenty of recognition to honor him. And thus, their hope was going to be all gone. They're hoping, but they aren't going to do very well. In the light of their past, they should hope, they should turn to God, but they aren't going to turn to God. And thus, they're in a very sorry condition. And their present apostasy, departure, their repeated failures, they aren't even paying attention to them. They just aren't. Hold your finger here a moment before we start. Over to Isaiah and chapter 30. Isaiah and chapter 30. Remember now, the Assyrian captivity is 722 B.C. And 100 years later is what you're looking at. 622, if you would, for illustration. You're looking at 100 years from the Assyrian captivity. And here's Judah, the southern two tribes, and they're facing who knows what. And they didn't pay any attention to learn a thing. They didn't learn a thing from the 10 tribes in the north. They should have paid attention. And they didn't pay attention at all. And thus they're going to reap what they sow. So here in Isaiah 30, picking up, please, in verse 15, you know it, wonderful. Thus saith the Lord God, the Holy One of Israel, in returning and rest shall ye be saved, and in quietness and in confidence shall be your strength. Now all you have to do is trust me, rest in me, rely upon me, and you'll have a wonderful time. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to take care of you. If they touch you, they touch me. Anyone that touches Israel. That's why God has blessed Israel today. Israel, anyone that honors Israel, even though they're in unbelief, God honors them. God honors anyone. Even in their unbelief, God will honor them and us. And Israel, and you know from Jewish history and all that, of the Jews have been blessed in all kinds of ways. Scientists and medicine and inventions and everything. I mean, they're head and shoulders up here above Gentiles. God has blessed them in unbelief. Now, here in Isaiah chapter 30, verse 15, The end of the verse, they would not. They would not do it. And, skipping down for time's sake, 1,000 shall be, verse 17, 1,000 shall flee at the rebuke of one. At the rebuke of five shall ye flee till ye be left as a beacon standing all alone, like a little lighthouse upon the top of a mountain, as an ensign on a hill. And therefore will the Lord wait, that he may, what for? That he may be gracious unto you. And therefore will he be exalted when he's able to be gracious. When God shows his grace, he's honored. When you trust God's grace, he's honored. We're going to go, John 1:16, we're going to be blessed from grace upon grace upon grace. The waves coming in, wave upon wave. God, that's how we walk by grace. We're saved by grace. We're demonstrating, as stewards of the mysteries of God, we're demonstrating the grace of God at this point. And God said, when you do that, when you honor my grace to you, I am exalted. You want to please God, honor the grace of God. Now, so here in verse 18, therefore will the Lord wait, that he may be gracious unto you. Therefore will he be exalted, what for? That he may be have mercy upon you. For the Lord is a God of judgment. Blessed are all they that wait for him. So God's waiting, remembering. Now how about your end? Are you remembering? I'm waiting. I remember to you. And you remember from last time that our Lord told us that you do this in, you know, on all the different places, in the communion, etc. Do this in remembrance of me. And the trouble is forgetting God. That's the trouble for Israel. You forget God. You forget what he did. You'll see it in a sec if I can get to it. Wow. They just forget. It's convenient to forget. It's convenient to forget. We put it aside. So now, God, here we are, and I'll wait. I'm waiting for you. And that's why we have a time, the age of grace. We're waiting. The Lord is a tarrying, and we have opportunity to honor him, and many have opportunity to get saved. So now, skipping up just a couple of, well, one more. In verse 20, though the Lord give you the bread of adversity and the water of affliction, yet shall not thy teacher be removed into a corner anymore, but thine eyes shall see thy teachers. All thine ears shall hear a word behind thee, saying, this is the way, walk ye in it. When ye turn to the right hand and when you turn to the left, God said, I'm there. You're going to have to get there where you're paying attention to me again. You're going to pay attention to me. Remember what I did. You aren't paying attention. Thus, Jeremiah chapter 2. And in Jeremiah chapter 2, remember, God remembers his love, his protection. They are holy people. They've been set apart as a set apart nation. And God is going to have a wonderful harvest. And God isn't going to lose the whole planting, Genesis 1, 2. It's your whole book of Genesis. God planted the beginning. And he's going to harvest at the end, Revelation. He didn't do his harvest for nothing at all. He's going to get from it. And Israel is going to get it. If you go after Israel, that's God's instrument, then God will go after you. And God will go after you and get you. And that's true. All the way through history. How come Israel lives through all kinds of opposition, opponent, obstacle, war, and they keep living? How come? How come no one absorbs them, gets rid of them? They can't. God is going to keep them. Now, having said that, Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 4, hear the word of the Lord, O house of Jacob, and all the families of the house of Israel. Now, this is for everybody in Israel. Judah is the only one now, but all of the people that are scattered by the Assyrian captivity, all about them, the province of Samaria, north of them, 30 miles north of Jerusalem, all of that providence is for them, the Samaritans, for the 10 tribes that are all scattered, for every Jew forever. Learn this. Thus, verse 5, thus saith the Lord, what iniquity have your fathers found in me, that they are gone far from me and have walked after vanity and are become vain? So God wants to know, he asked the question, what iniquity have your fathers found in me? That's what I want to know. I want to know, you're going to blame me, you're blaming God. Now, you're blaming me. I'm going to stand there and say, well, tell me what I did wrong. Tell me where I went wrong, which is the word iniquity, wrong. And thus, to turn away this iniquity, to be entangled, to cause knots, instead of keeping something straight like a fishing line, it gets all knotted up. Did I knot that up? Did I get that all out of place? Did I make it so crooked? Did I go and commit such wrong, such deviating wrongness, such wickedness, such disorderliness? Did I do this to you? Is your problem right now because I did this to you, said God? Now hang on to that. Hold your finger here and over to Deuteronomy. And in chapter 32, easiest, quickest, Deuteronomy chapter 32. And you will notice, if I may, go directly in the light of the context, verse 4. He is the rock, speaking of our great God, their God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. He is the rock. His work is perfect. All his ways are judgment, a God of truth and without iniquity. There's your word. Now God said, what iniquity have you found in me? I am without iniquity. Now tell me where I went wrong. What did I do to make your problem, to make your life like it is? You want to blame me? Tell me what you think it is. Now watch. And the end of verse 4, of the God of truth and without iniquity and right is he. He is without iniquity and without taking time to build that up. He just isn't, don't have any. We have plenty. Israel had plenty, but God doesn't have any. So now back over to chapter 2, Jeremiah, verse 5. 2 and verse 5. And you'll notice, please, What wrong? Where did I go wrong? Where am I wrong? In the light of the fathers. In other words, your fathers, what iniquity have your fathers found in me? Now tell me, which one? Is it Moses? Aaron? Which one do we want to go? All the way down the line. Which one has found iniquity in me? Tell me where I have gone wrong with you. Tell me that. What is wrong? What evil have I done? And you'll notice, please, they are gone far from me, distant is the word. They have distant from me, and that has a negative answer to the question. And the end of verse 5, and have become vain. They have become vain. They walked far from me, and they become vain. The word vain, vapor, breath, breathing, something that's only there for a moment, driven by the wind, it's there and it disappears. And thus it means worthlessness, uselessness, nothingness, delusion. You have an illusion of something that isn't even existent. You have a bubble that will break and the bubble isn't even there. The bubble isn't even there to break. It's an illusion to you. You're looking for something. You're looking for something and it isn't going to ever happen. It isn't true. It isn't going to be found in any way. So now, picking up, please, in verse, they want to know what iniquity. So I just apply that. He is our God and we're in his presence right now. And so of all the things in your life, about your life, where is God wrong? Where has God done you wrong. How's that? And then you think through all the things that you have, the coming and going in your life, the work, home, school, play, health, wealth, all this different stuff. And where is God? Where is he guilty of failing to be God in his fullness of character? He has never violated. He never violates his character or his conduct. So are we going to learn something, A, from Israel back then? Back then, they got coming. Here we got a nation, and we have a little, may have a little break in the way we're headed, politically and otherwise. We may have a break. It isn't going to stop. It isn't going to stop the movement. No, it may be a break. It isn't going to stop what's going to happen. And it's going to happen. And so now, God, here we are looking. And in the process, we want to be able to say, God, God, why? God, why is it all happening? Well, because God told you. It's all going to happen because of the rebellion, the unbelief of the world and Israel. And the world's going to pay for it. Going to pay. God makes them pay in a most merciful and gracious way, but he's going to pay. The wrath of God is going to abide on them. And God's going to do that. God's going to do it. Well, here we are looking. And God, we're looking to you, and what are we going to do? Blame God? Or are we just going to go and conveniently remove God? If we can just get God, then we can live in our politic, in our government, in the management of our life, because we know the reality of our world. It's my pain, my heartache, my job, my home, my health, my life, my future. God, what could you possibly do or know about my world? You don't know, God. That's what you say. You don't know. We know. That's what Israel was doing. People do that. That's what we do. We say, well, God said, what did I do wrong? Did you understand how it started? I saved you by grace. I'm there to love you, save you, if you would let me. If I'd become your, I would take care of you. But you won't let me. See? Well, now. So now, here in the light of that, and by the way, so here's all the idols, you know, that are going to be there. And in the light of verse 6, neither said they, in the light of that. Remember the worship. I should just go back to that. Their worship that they were doing is in the, they were doing worship. They were doing an and they have gone astray. We can't go down to verse 7, but if you did at the moment, if you went down there, Israel, God goes all the way back to where it started. Now it started after Mount Sinai. When they got out there, they turned and rebelled. They became apostate. They turned away from God, his word, and his person. And the greatest thing they did was to build a make a golden what? A golden calf. And the golden calf, they never got out of it. They were in it all the way. How do you know? Well, because when you move down, remember this little space and Joshua and the little time. But, hey, listen, is it, what are we doing? It's going the wrong way. And in the process, Israel is going to do what? Over, if you do it to Judges, hold your finger here. Over to Judges chapter 2. And you would remember and recall Judges chapter 2. Israel, remember, Joshua dies, the elders die. The elders, the last people that have any remembrance of history. When you lose history, you're in trouble. That's why we try to remind you in our feeble, limited way of what yesterday was like. Because if you don't know what yesterday was like, all you have in your historical experience is right now. And you have no idea of yesterday. And that's all you're going to work with. So you're going to read the Bible and think now. And you aren't going to equate, put it together properly. Because what does the Bible know? What does God know? What could he possibly know in such sentences, you see? And so we don't have a history. We have to have history. And that's what protects us for our own country. That's one of the things we keep fighting for, isn't it? Try to get the... What was the purpose of the Declaration of Independence? Why did they all sign, we'll all die at whatever cost to make this work? What on earth was in their head? Why did they write it? Why did they write the Constitution, the Bill of Rights? Well, why did they do this? What for? And right now, they would like to get rid of the Constitution. It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. The Constitution is. I mean, what is it? Nothing. Nothing. See? And that's what you got. You got a system. And anyway, that's what's going on in part of it. And you got that going. And get rid of it. And it doesn't mean anything. God, here's the law. Israel had a wonderful God who would keep them. They had abandoned the law. They had left the law. Unthankful, unthoughtful in their heart, they had left the law. They had left the God who gave the law. And they didn't even try to have any understanding of Passover, feast, worship, sacrifice. None of it meant anything comparatively. And so when you have that, dear friend, you've got nothing. And history is where you came from. And history is going to help you understand where you're going. If you forget history, you don't have a history, then all you can do is work with the present, and that is very unfortunate. And most history teachers, if you took history in school, history is some depending. Isn't history sometime not too exciting? How's that? Is that it? Not too exciting? Well, history is very exciting because it's where we are. The reason we're here is because of there. You understand? Everything has grown. Everything has proceeded down the corridor of time. So now, here in Judges, chapter 2, verse 10. And also all that generation were gathered unto their fathers, and there arose another generation after them, which knew not the Lord, nor yet the works which he had done for Israel. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served Baalim, and they forsook the Lord. They turned away from God. It was easy to turn away. I don't have a sense of God. A personal God, a present God. Who? I bet you, if you had to go up and down on the street, the bus, school, wherever, ask them. Ask them in a nice way. Hey, listen, where is God? And how do you know he's there? How's that? No. What God? Who? God? Who's God? Ah. You see, they aren't. And the trouble is the church is infected with this disease that's deadly. And thus, what iniquity have I done? And there is no sense, no sense. And thus, keep going, just over chapter 2. And in verse 6, in verse 5, wherefore also I said, I will not drive them out. Oh, hold on, I'm still in there. Judges, huh? Judges is like Jeremiah with a J. What can I tell you? Jeremiah chapter 2. You gotta hurry. I'm going to try to finish the book the next century. Chapter 2. Would you please pick up in verse 6. Neither said they did not say, where is the Lord that brought us up out of the land of Egypt? A, God said, you want to blame me for your life, for your world? Now, what did I do to make the world like it is? What I'm trying to do is I cry, die to save whosoever in the world. And I'm going to work it all out. But they aren't interested in working it out. And it isn't my fault. I didn't make the problem, said God. The world did. Your own heart did. That's where the iniquity is. It isn't with God. So you have to be very careful. You don't blame God, accuse God, or ignore God. That's the danger. To put him aside as irrelevant. And once you do that, you and I are in trouble. Because then we're the average churchgoer, religious up to our eyeballs, but no life. Nothing. And after a while it gets boring trying to do and be something that we never have any power about. No life, no heartbeat, no heartbeat. Now, thus, in chapter 2 and verse 6, where is the Lord? Where is the Lord that brought us up out of the land of Egypt? And they were forgetting this history. They were not taking it to heart. They forgot that they were owned by God. God paid a price for them and delivered them at Mount Sinai, from Exodus to Mount Sinai. All their past and all their future belonged to God. It all belonged to God. And therefore, God provided and protected them. God provided and protected them. And I'll read it. God reminds them. Verse 6. Neither said they, where is the Lord that brought us out of the land of Egypt, that led us through the wilderness? And remember, if you go back, it was in the place of death. It's maybe one person with a little canteen and can manage. But for 2 million plus people and animals by the thousands, you tell me. What are you going to do? For water, food. Wow. Now, so through the wilderness, through, verse 6, through a land of deserts and of pits, fissures, crevices, cracks, everything. Everything was a job. There was no path to follow. There was no place, no shade. It was nothing out there, seemingly, comparatively. Through a land of drought, a shadow of death. Like in Psalm 23, he leadeth me, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. The desert was just a place for dead people to survive. For dead people to go and die. You lived there. I kept you. Through the land that no man passed through, and where no man dwelt, I did something marvelous for 40 years, actually. I kept you there. And I brought you into a plentiful country. And picking up, plentiful means garden, a garden-like, very pleasant. I brought you into a garden compared to the desert. The land was loaded with, you didn't have to dig for coal, for fuel, for metal. I put it all on top of the ground. All you had to do was take it. That's all you had to do. Wow. Verse 6. All you had to do was take the stuff. Now, in the light of that, keeping that in mind. And remember now, they had a wonderful sense of victory. God brought us up out of the land of Egypt. And verse 7, on God brought you into a plentiful country to eat the fruit thereof and the goodness thereof. But when you entered, ye defiled my land and made mine inheritance abomination. You went and did that which is right in your own eyes. The whole book of Judges is about what? The failure. Joshua did his part. Did Joshua stop? Did Moses stop? Deuteronomy. After my death, you're going to do worse. I'm holding it back by being here. You're going to do worse. After the death of Joshua, are we going to do better? No, we're going to go downhill. After Josiah, are we going to go uphill? We're going to go downhill. Always downhill. You can't leave God out. You're trying to leave God out of the equation. You can't do that. So here they are. And thus, in verse 8. The priest said not, where is the Lord? Now he's going to list everybody, because he said, listen, what are you doing with me? And you have to ask yourself, what am I doing with God? I don't know what you do. How do I know what you do? What am I doing with him? What's he doing with me? What's he doing with me? I don't know. You have to answer that. What's he doing with you? I don't know. How's he? Are you looking to him to be there? You're there, and even when everything's horrible, he's going to be, because if you're a believer, then you're sanctified. If you're a believer, you're sanctified and set apart. And if you're a believer and sanctified and set apart, then you belong to whom? The living and only God. And is he going to keep you as the apple of his eye? Oh, yes, he is. You belong to him. Of all the people in your work, in your neighborhood, in your perhaps home, the ownership, here they all are, and how many of them belong to God? He bought them, and they have received his Son, and thus they are his. How many belong to them? I don't know. And do you belong to him? See? And then God says, well, what I do wrong? Next question, where is the one that brought them up? They said, where is God? Where is God? And down in verse 9, whence is the Lord? The priest said not. Where is the Lord? They didn't even look for God. Weren't they the priests that are supposed to teach? Teach? Aren't they supposed to be telling about God? The God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob? But they didn't. They didn't. They didn't say, so where's God? We can go to church. We can go and do everything. Read 100 books. And when you're all done reading and thinking and talking, where is God? When you're all done, where's God? And we aren't any better off than they if we don't understand. You're always in the presence of God, and you need to exercise that wonderful presence of God in a most wonderful way. And thus you have the priest, and they that handle the law knew me not. And then the pastors, the word pastors is civil administrators, rulers. It's the word shepherd, but that's what it means when you put it all together here. The civil administrators, the rulers. So we're going to take the priest, going to take the people that know the law, the Levites, etc. Going to take the rulers, the public rulers, the ministers, kings, princes. You're going to take them that transgressed against me. And the prophets prophesied by Baal. They weren't getting inspiration from God. They were getting it from each other or from something else. And walked after the things that do not profit. There's no profit in it. No profit. It's useless. Useless. When we're all done. And when you're all done, we don't want to do that. We don't want to run. God saved us, among other things, from Hebrews. He saved us from dead works, didn't he? He saved us from dead works. So what do we want to keep producing death for? We don't want to do that for. There's no profit to it. It's useless. But if someone said that, no, I put all my whole heart in this. I've given my whole life to this project, to this thought, to this thing. And all idolatry, remember if we took time to look at it, all idolatry starts, Ezekiel 14, etc., in the heart of your own heart of people. And so all idolatry comes out of the heart. And thus you have a problem. Because all the idols and all of the philosophy and all of religion and all that we have is out of our own being. And it's no better than we are. If I go and create a religion, or I'm a Mohammed, and I create a Islam or a Buddha or a Confucius or a Shinto or something else, and I create that, where'd it come from? I did it. And then I get other people to want to do it. And there's no power to it. There's no life to it. But people energize themselves in place of God because they don't want to get to God. So God, here you are, trying to get Israel to wake up, trying to get Israel to look to you, to trust you with all their heart. And in the process of all of that, God, what have we got? Well, God, your wonderful person and presence happens to always be there. And there's no reason, not on this earth, there's no reason to blame you for anything. We blame ourselves, always. Judge me, Psalm 43. Judge me, O God, first. Before I do anybody to anyone, anywhere, anyhow, you start with yourself. Judge me, O God. Start with me. And if I do that, I'm going to be in the right place. Judge me. And I'm going to look to God, and God loves, cares, he does. Doesn't he? You aren't sure. Sure he does. God's loving you now, and God's delighted in being who he is, and he's caring, he's merciful, kind, omnipresent, all-powerful, and righteous and holy and all of that. And so here we are. God, do you have a purpose for our lives? You can answer that. Does he have power to fulfill the purpose? Does he have power to fulfill his purpose for your life? I don't know. And in the process of that, in the process of all of that, thus we're able to go and we're set apart, sanctified for that wonderful purpose, for God to be who he is. And therefore, don't lose out, don't lose your love, don't lose God, don't lose God in the process of all that's going on, don't lose God. Don't follow the crowd. And pick up all the wonderful truths to practice, abiding in Christ like the vine of the branch, knowing that in quietness and confidence shall be your strength, and returning in rest shall you be saved. So we're going to look to God. We're going to practice it. Why? Because that's the only way we're going to do it. We're going to have to trust God. And God will do what he does. So here we are, planet Earth, in watching our country and the world and global conditions. They're all there in great, great vigor. Now, God, you're going to have to help us so that we stand here in the middle of the mess. We don't want to miss out on you in the mess. God, we're going to trust you. So, God, you're going to have to help us. God, I'm not going to blame you for anything. And I don't want to talk about yesterday. God, you have been kind to me. Think of all the things that could have been in your life had God treated you differently. Can you imagine that? If you don't understand that, think of all the world. Think of hospitals, all kinds of things, people, war, conflict, confusion, chaos, all over the world. Just get in your jet carpet and fly around and go look. All that could have been, could be in your life, that isn't. But all that is, think of all that isn't in your life. How things could be different. Besides, you knew how I hurt. Do you know how much you could hurt? Do you know how bad it could be? And we're looking to God to help us. So we're trying to learn, Jeremiah. We're trying to learn. We're trying to stay with it. So we understand. Israel tried to awaken God tried to awaken Israel in its apostasy. He tried to tell them that he is still God, but if they didn't get with it, are they going to be in trouble? Are they going to be in trouble? The future is looking at you, waiting for you to enter it. True. What's ahead in the future? For you, your family, your health, your wealth. Ah! And no one can help me get there except the God who got me this far. Huh? And that's what you're going to trust. Anyway, I wish I could help you more. You got a little bit? So we'll pray 2 or 3, 4 or 5.